Ladies and gentlemen, it's episode 273, I think now, isn't it, of Abe Thompson and Other Disappointments. Welcome to the midweek solo show. They've all been solo shows recently. I'm finding it a bit difficult to persuade total strangers, most of whom have, you know, acquired a bit of a reputation. They're kind of proven experts or very well known or highly regarded in their fields. I'm finding it very difficult to persuade them in my approaches to A, give up an hour and a half of their Friday night, when God knows we would all rather be out in the pub drinking away our sorrows. Drinking to forget. I'm finding it hard to persuade them to give up an hour of their Friday night, but I'm also finding it difficult to persuade them that they should, albeit only temporarily, be associated with me. That's the vibe that I'm getting. Like, hey, Joe Bloggs, do you want to come on the pod? You know, it's a bit of a riot. You know, I've had some fairly decent guests on. I've had Femi, Marina Perkis, Ian Dale, Gemma Forte, Super Tansky. Just some of the names who have been good enough to afford me an hour of their time. I wondered if you might like to join me one night. Glass of wine, little beer, put the world to rights. Aren't you the hashtag Tories fuck livestock guy? Yeah, that is. No dice. No, not even for a second. I didn't even have to think about that, Aid. We live in very uncertain times, Aid Thompson. A lot of what happens in the modern world, we really have to consider. But I didn't have to think about that for one second. It was an immediate no. I'm just kidding. Like, nobody's that brutal. But you just get the idea sometimes. Maybe it's like low self-worth. Maybe it's me like putting myself down. But sometimes you just get the idea, the feeling, the sense that people are like, maybe. Maybe in a few weeks, Aid. Maybe like text me in a couple of months. I'll let you know. I've got a lot on at the moment. That sort of vibe. Anyway, how are you guys doing? What's going on out there? What's the happy haps? Thank you very much for you guys giving up an hour of your time, joining me once again as I try to make sense of the senseless, as I try to put the world to rights over its many, many wrongs. On this show, what's been going on out there? Let's get into it. I suppose the big story of today has been this sword attack, hasn't it? Which has been, you know, pretty shocking. I mean, my bar is pretty high in terms of the news stories that are still able to shock me. It feels like we're through the looking glass these days, doesn't it? I mean, aliens turned up. Aliens were confirmed. Like 6 months ago, you had senior Pentagon officials speaking at Congress, basically confirming the existence of aliens, that they've encountered them several times, dozens of times. And it just came and went like everything else in the news cycle, didn't it? Like it was nothing. One of the biggest questions, possibly the biggest question in the history of humanity. Are we alone in the universe? Is there life out there? And Pentagon officials are like, yeah, there definitely is. We've had flying saucers, beings, vehicles, things flying through the sky that absolutely could not be from human origin. It's technology that we have never produced. Nobody could explain it. Aliens do exist. All right, okay. Joey, what's happening with Brexit, though? What's the latest with Trump-Biden? Did you not hear me? Aliens. I said aliens do exist. Yeah, I know. But that's, you know. Can we move on, you know? It's not all about you. I know it's your big moment, NASA, matey. I know you dreamt that this moment was going to be big and an orchestra playing in the background as you delivered this message. I think, you know, I think I speak for all of us here when I say none of us want to miss Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares. It's season 15, episode 7. Apparently, he's a monster in it. He's a beast. So can we rain check this existential question? Let's talk about this sword thing, shall we? Hainault latest suspect in hospital after boy 14 killed in sword attack. And I suppose, you know, by the time most of you who listen to this or watch this see it, a lot more questions will have been answered by then. But right now, like as at time of recording, as it were, a guy with a sword went on a murderous rampage. It seemed very scary, sort of the earlier hours of today. Like, the story was developing. People didn't really know what was going on. Was it a terror attack? Was it somebody who was mentally ill? Nobody was prepared to say, mostly because at that point, nobody knew if it was a black guy or a white guy yet. That was pretty much all it was. It was like, what colour is he? What colour is he? And I think possibly the biggest tragedy of this was, I mean, look, you know, the boy who was 14 was killed. That is actually, you know, pretty shocking. Maybe second to that was the fact that I made a TikTok about this. It kind of like, not as it was happening, like it already sort of resolved itself, but there certainly weren't any reports of like dead kids in the news yet. And so I thought, you know, yes, it's a bit too soon, but also this is satire and, you know, the zeitgeist, the comedy zeitgeist. You got to surf the news cycle with those comedic devices. So you got to get in there quick. I was talking about this the other week, wasn't I? That horrible crunch point or pinch point between political satire, which has to be delivered fairly quickly, and also comedy equals tragedy plus time. You need a bit of time there sometimes. So anyway, I made this TikTok. It was about 2 minutes long. And it was just me riffing on the situation, just taking the piss out of, you know, London, how, you know, there are other knifings and, you know, stabbings and stuff in the southeast. But then, you know, this is basically like London looking at the rest of the southeast going like, yeah, well, you know, now I'm going to show you how the big boys do it. You know, like, they're just ripping into it, just roasting the ridiculous idea that somebody would bother to order a sword. Like, because where are you going to buy a sword from? Where does anyone, like, you're going to be really annoyed at someone to bother ordering a sword in from internet, like from China or somewhere, and wait for it to turn up. And the anger doesn't subside over the 4 weeks it took to deliver it from China. Still, and then finally you sign for it, you're still enraged. You're like, ah, yes! Yes, now I'm going to go out on the rampage. Anyway, I did this, you know, two-minute TikTok ripping into it. And, you know, and then the news broke that there was a dead kid in it. And a dead kid had been... an alive kid had been deaded. Sorry. Get my words very mixed up this evening. And then I just, oh, you know, when a news story develops and you thought it was A and it turns out to be not even B, but C, D, or E, and it's just terrible. And I immediately deleted the TikTok and I felt terrible. I think one of the reasons that news stories shock us like this is because it really sort of taps into this idea that things are getting worse, doesn't it? Which, God knows, I mean, if you've listened to more than 3 or 4 of these podcasts, right, you will know that is a sensibility that is especially close to my heart. Things do feel like they're getting worse. I don't think that's revelatory content for anybody out there. But it does feel like that, doesn't it? When you hear of something like this taking place, when you hear a news story that a guy has got hold of a sword, a great big fuck off sword, and gone on the rampage, you do, you automatically think back to your childhood and stuff, and you go like, well, it never used to be. You never used to hear stories of like guys running around with machetes and swords and stuff. Like, what's happened to this country? And you have to remind yourself, yeah, number one, you think it back to your childhood, like, the reason you didn't, that stuff like that didn't happen, stuff like that did happen when you were a kid. I mean, I don't know if anybody remembers, like, all of the tabloid hysteria about the Yardies in London and skinheads and some of the horrible stuff that London gangs got up to in the 80s and in the 90s. But the reason, or the probable reason, that you don't remember it being like that is because you probably had okay parents who shielded you. They just earmuffed you from all of the horrors. Like, what kind of a parent would sit their kid down and go like, yeah, did you hear three kids died in a machete attack in North London? Like, no! Just sit them in front of the Disney Channel or whatever it was back then, SMTV or Teenage Mutant Turtles, and keep them innocent. Let them have a childhood, is what your parents would have decided on or concluded. So that's why things seem like they didn't used to be this bad as they are now. I mean, just off the top of my head, like, there have been horror stories before, like, the last 10 years. You know? I know everybody loves to froth and rant about, you know, Khan's London and how has he allowed it to descend into this sort of murderous chaos. It's the immigrants. It's all the immigrants. That seems to be the narrative that is woven more than a little frequently. But just off the top of my head, I mean, there were violent crimes before, like, the last hit. Like, do you remember, there was the girl, an actress in EastEnders. I think her own brother, like, stabbed her and chopped her up. I probably should have done a trigger warning before this episode. But yeah, like, her own family member chopped her up. And they found a torso or something, like, in the canal in Camden. Or something like that. That's pretty violent. I'd say that's at least on a par with a sword rampage. There was a gay couple, like, about 15 years ago. I remember reading about this. They had an argument and the one guy stabbed the other. Cut his fucking head off. And kept it in a polythene bag or something. I remember that one. Absolutely terrifying news story. I mean, can we blame that retrospectively on Sadiq Khan? No, that would be lunacy, wouldn't it? It's got nothing to do with woke or wokeism or multiculturalism. It's just that every now and then there's a weird fucking news story. It's like a glitch in the Matrix, isn't it? One person somewhere in the United Kingdom just goes a bit crazy and goes out on a spree or, you know, thinks that they're writing a wrong or the voices talk to them in their head. Like, honestly, like, everyone likes to imagine, like, we left the European Union, but then the Remainers couldn't take it. And then so then they took over the civil service. And now there's this sort of global progressive crushing oppression elite. Right. If you listen to people like Liz Truss and that Matthew. Oh, what's his name? The guy that did the book about the new elite. Can't remember his fucking name now. Everyone subscribes to this idea that around 2016, the Remainers couldn't take it and wokeism took hold and everyone's just too bloody soft now. And now the crime rate is soaring and murders are out of control. But in actual fact, you know, I was doing a bit of digging on this earlier. I had a little look, little bit of analysis on my lunch break. Off the back of, there was a tweet by Isabel Oakeshott. I don't know if any of you are familiar with her. I imagine a few of you will be. She's famous for two things. One, being a substandard journalist. I think she writes for the Telegraph, doesn't she? She's very pro-Brexit. She got a scoop by way of Matt Hancock. She was ghostwriting his autobiography. But then all of the material that he gave her as source material, she then used retrospectively to expose him in the Telegraph. completely fudged him over. I'm trying to keep the swearing to the minimum here so I don't get demonetized. So she's famous for that, but she's also famous for being Richard Tice's squeeze. Richard Tice of the Brexit Party, Richard Tice now of Reform. She is his other half. And anyway, she put out this thing, this tweet earlier. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, okay, here we go. Isabel Oakeshott, guys, Brexit Barbie. And she said, she goes, modern Britain has become utterly lawless. End of March, passenger stabbed on a train in broad daylight. April, teachers stabbed in a school horror. And then 13-year-old boy killed with samurai sword. How has this country disintegrated so fast? She says. And it took me all of 2 minutes to find out whether, you know, to look at this, to assess it. Like, has the country disintegrated? Like, I know that these stories are shocking, but are things actually getting worse, or does it just feel that way to us? Or is she just trying to weave a narrative because it actually works out quite well for her, you know? Because although she is a conservative with a small c, she's very much in the Reform camp because her boyfriend is leading Reform. That's her boyfriend. She supports her boyfriend. So I had a look on the Parliament website, Parliament statistics, and you will be shocked to hear that no, violent crime, murders are not really up. they operate at around 600 a year. There's 600 murders out of 65 million people. So although it might feel when we see these shocking stories, and they are shocking, you know, a guy running around with a fucking sword, I'd be scared. People getting massacred on the train, like, yeah, that's horrendous. Obviously, it's shocking. But, you know, pro rata or whatever the word is, like, if you stretch it out across the entire country, are we disintegrating? Is the murder rate exploding? No, it's not. And yet, Isabel Oakeshott is a journalist who is supposed to go out and find facts and stats, studies, truth to prove an overarching narrative. That's her job. Me, I'm a weird internet bastard, and I managed to find that out in 2 minutes, probably less than that, on my lunch break. So yeah, ladies and gents, Isabel Oakeshott. Take a bow, Izzy. Take a bow, love. I mean, here's what never ceases to amaze me about this sort of thing, right? Is conservatives like Isabel Oakeshott, and it's not just her, by a long shot, there are hundreds, if not thousands out there who will fit the description I'm about to give you, right? Small C conservatives, doesn't matter if they're full-blown Tories or if they're just, you know, comfortably on the right. But the people who don't understand that A gets to B, you know, like if you defund public services, if you diminish them and dismiss them and let them rot and crumble to the point where, you know, I'm not 100% that this is a mental health thing at the moment at time of recording, but there's a lot of suggestions out there that it is. So let's assume that it is for now. Excuse me. If you take your ideological sensibilities and that governs your decision to defund or dismiss or diminish, you know, to cut numbers of nurses, to shrink the number of beds on a ward so that people with mental health problems, even if, like, if you just disparage the idea of mental health, that's a big thing too. If you're one of these people who sits on the right and you, for ideological reasons, continue to shut down the conversation about public services, about healthcare, and you don't understand that shutting these facilities, that's A, that A leads to B, where this guy gets turfed out on the street and starts running around with a sword on a rampage. Like, how do you... And then in the next breath, they're like, yeah, we're the conservatives, and we're tough on crime and tough on the causes of crime. Really? Because it doesn't fucking look like it, mate. Anyway, let's move on, shall we, guys? Here is a story. This is very on brand for, like, veteran listeners will know, and I apologize for keeping repeating myself when I say this, but we're picking up new listeners all the time, and I want to make sure that people know the vibe of the show. The long-time Binfluencer, people of the Booge crew, will know that when we sort of run out of politics, and I sort of feel like I'm at that point at the moment, like we all know the election is coming, we don't know when it's going to be announced. Humza Yousaf has stepped down, so that whole SNP Greens sort of thing has all imploded. That's happened. We know that the next government is going to probably be a Keir Starmer-led. Do you understand what I mean? And even overseas, even over in the US, we know that Donald Trump is stuck in that courtroom every day. Everything feels a little bit like, you know, a bit boring at the moment. Which seems weird to say that, because so much of my life over the last, like, you know, 5 or 6 years, I've been like, when can we make politics boring again? Who remembers when politics is just old, white, grey-haired guys in the Houses of Parliament talking about interest rates and, you know, we got to get inflation to a steady... You know, it's just like that. For decades, it was like that. And then Brexit and Trump happened, and it's never really been the same since. But right now, it feels kind of boring, guys. So, you will know, veteran listeners, that occasionally I look for something weird and wonderful going on stateside. Usually, that means a sort of gun control related story, dripping with Americana. But today, we've got something slightly different. It's not even taking place in America, although it is. I clicked the US news thing and it popped up, but it's in the Americas. Should I do it in American accent still? This took place in Mexico. And I can't do a Mexican accent, so I'll just do it in my own accent. This is on the Mail Online. It says, the wedding menu that put 80 guests in a hospital and left more than 100 people vomiting is revealed. As one attendee says, men and women were given different food, but all of them ended up sick. So, there's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? It's a wedding, and 80 of its guests have gone to hospital. And more than 100 were vomiting as a result of this. So let's talk about that first, okay? What's the first thing that comes into your mind when I say that? It's a wedding, 80 guests end up in hospital. What's going through your mind right now? Should I tell you what's going through my mind? Whose husband did this bitch steal? That's what's going through my mind. Because somebody's really angry about this wedding. Someone's gone out of their way to quite seriously poison the entire wedding party. Whose husband did this bitch pinch? Something's happened here. And the reason I think it's her taking a husband off someone else is because I think if it was a guy, I think in that situation, like, the guys would fight. He might track him down and, like, beat the shit out of him. But I don't... I think women are more, like, malicious, more Machiavellian. They're cleverer. They're smarter with this sort of thing. Whose husband did she steal? Which happy family has this monster broken up? Should we have a read? Let's get into it, shall we? A guest at a wedding reception revealed the four-course menus that left more than 100 invitees terribly ill, with 80 people being admitted to hospital. Aranza Rodriguez attended the ceremony Saturday night in the central city of Cuernavaca, I think I'm saying that right, Mexico, and was rushed to a Red Cross hospital where she was treated for bacterial infection. She told a Mexican newspaper, Proquiso, that she was a guest of the groom, Fernando, whose wedding party started at around 4 p.m. with dinner set to be served at 6. She recalled arriving to wedding venue. Nice one, Mail. Between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. and noticing that many of the guests were experiencing aggravated symptoms that included headaches, stomach pain, vomit, and diarrhea. Hell of a party! Ha I mean, if you were the best man and you were freestyling the speech, it would potentially... There's some material to mine there, isn't there? You're not going to go blank and choke. You're going to have some material to work with. Despite the unsettling scene, Rodriguez placed her meal order and dined at about 10 p.m. as the ambulances started to arrive. Imagine what must have been going through her mind. Imagine it. As everybody who's eaten their meals just before you, like it says she just placed her order. I don't know what the culture is out there. If it's, you know, you turn up to a thing and you place. But imagine if you just placed your order and then you're just starting to eat your food as everyone else is falling like dominoes. With just a horrible feeling like, oh God. Oh no. Oh no. I mean, the other explanation for this is that, they were all absolutely gacked out on product. You know, I mean, it's Mexico, it's South America, right? Lot of cocaine in that part of the world. And I'm not saying that's definitely what happened here, but I'm just saying, you know, when in Rome, right? Like if you're in Mexico and it's the cocaine supply is plentiful and everyone's getting bang on the chang. Sometimes it's cut with weird stuff. It could give you diarrhea, might make you feel rather unwell. And then it's like it's a horrible thing for the chef then. Because this is a whole party of people who are really embarrassed that they've taken this, but they can't admit that they're all on like class A's, and it was the drugs that did it. So one guy stands, oh, I think there was something in the chicken, and then everyone else is like, oh yeah, it's the chicken, it's totally the chicken. Now this poor like chef is going to go round the world famous for being the worst wedding chef in Mexico, certainly. In the world, possibly, although there's probably worse chefs in Croydon. Poor guy, now he's going to have to take the hit for it, isn't he? But yeah, man, 80 guests in hospital and more than 100 people vomiting. And it's the second half of that as well, second half of the headline where it says, as one attendee says that men and women were given different food. It all ended up... But why were men and women given different food? Like, what's that about? How weird and backward is that? Like, wouldn't you be upset? I reckon my girlfriend would kick off if I took her... Even if I took her to an international wedding with golden beaches in Mexico and we were in the hotel, we're checking in, I'll be like, oh, yeah, it's my... My friend Pedro from university, he's getting married. Anyway, like, apparently the culture here is that, I'm going to eat this steak. These fried or double fried chips. I got some of the beans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, yeah, the women's menu. That's your food. She looks over and it's just like, you know, a couple of, I don't know what vegetables do they have in Mexico? But whatever it is, if they gave her like just a piddly little salad while I'm stuffing a steak in my face, I think my girlfriend would be upset. I think, you know, maybe that's what happened. Maybe a British woman went out there, was really upset at the separate, you know, gender-specific menus. She was like, motherfuck that. And then she poured the poison in there. If I can't have a steak, nobody's having steak. I mean, it could be a mafia thing too, couldn't it? Feels a little bit mafia, right? Like the huge disrespect that you would be showing to the other cartel or whatever. To poison everyone and maybe potentially kill somebody, like, or kill a whole family of people. There's shades of mafia to that, isn't there? Let's continue, shall we? It says, Rodriguez recalled being served wild mushrooms with goat cheese and tomato coulis as the appetizer. For her main course dish, she was served chicken breast stuffed with spinach, tarragon and sweet potato. This is making me hungry, man. I'm the only glutton that you will ever hear of who could get hungry reading about a meal, food, that sent 80 other people to the fucking hospital. I'm such a fat bastard. What was it? Oh, yeah, it says, while she's not sure which of the meals made her sick, she remembers the wild mushrooms had the aftertaste of a very strong chemical. She recalls the same smell after she was sick. Footage on social media showed the... So she remembers it tasting like a very strong... So that, to me, that sounds like somebody's, you know, poured something in there. I mean, these guys have had a rough night, right? That sounds like an horrendous wedding to go to. Nobody likes a bad wedding. But if there's one thing that these people should be thankful for, should be grateful for, it's that this didn't take place in Britain. Because then they really would be in for a bad night. They would go to the wedding, they would eat the poison food or, you know, whatever happened to it. It would go to, like, 80 guests end up going, get sent off to the hospital. Firstly, there would be no room for them all at the hospital. So that's like 40 people stuck out in casualty, begging for help, keeled over on the floor. And then the 40 people that are admitted to the hospital, then they start to feel better, right? The doctors and nurses are like, how are you feeling? Yeah, you got the IV. Okay, cool. Yeah, cool. Yeah, he's feeling a lot better now. Yeah, bring him out some food. Then they bring out that NHS hospital food. Has like a mouthful of mashed potato and like mushy peas. Immediately sets him off again. You'd be twice as sick having the NHS shitty hospital food that the government won't allow us to upgrade and make it actually edible. I mean, I suppose if this did happen in the UK, it wouldn't happen in the UK. Do you know what I mean? You probably don't. Let me explain. Because if somebody, like, let's assume it is a mafia or, you know, a grieved ex-wife kind of situation, right? If somebody in the UK was angry enough to bother, like, to go out and get some poison and then sneak into the kitchen and put it into all of the ingredients, like, if somebody was angry enough at one of these two that they bothered, they wouldn't even do it. Do you know what they would do? They'd go and order a sword, wouldn't they? That's what they would do. That's how we handle stuff in the UK. None of this playing around with funky mushrooms. You learners. Get yourself a sword. That's how we do. Another thing I wanted to talk about tonight. Have we still got time? I think we still got time. Was the migration of Talk TV to YouTube. Which is, you know, a lot of times on this show, I enjoy a beer. You may have noticed that. A lot of times, like, sometimes I've actually had a cocktail. You know, I enjoy a little cheeky, canned Marks and Spencer's cocktail. But sometimes, where a beer doesn't work, or a cocktail doesn't feel right, or it's just a Tuesday night like today, I like to wash down a nice big helping of Schadenfreude. And Talk TV's move to YouTube is super strength in that respect. So just to wind back a little bit, for those of you perhaps not familiar with the history of Talk TV, there were discussions in the upper echelons of the Conservative Party and right-wing press some time ago that a gaping hole in British broadcasting, my joke cocks in my head are like, immediately go, like, how do you turn this into a joke about an arsehole aid? A gaping hole. There was a gaping hole in the British media space for a British Fox News. That was the idea. This is well documented by people like Dominic Cummings, people like Robbie Gibb. Alan Rusbridger has done some stuff like talking about this. Like, go and seek that out. He writes for, I think, Prospect Magazine now. So if you want the sort of backstory in detail, his work is very good on it. But it was identified that there was, you know, there wasn't a British Fox News, and so maybe they should make one. It might help to get talking points across. It might bolster the case, especially in these days of social media and clickbait, clippage, and, you know, you get the idea. So, loads of conversations took place. Rupert Murdoch wanted to get in on it. Paul Marshall, the investor, hedge fund guy, he wanted to get in on it. Andrew Neil wanted to get in on it. And so the output of all of those conversations was GB News for Paul Marshall and Andrew Neil, and Talk TV for Rupert Murdoch. But it was just a couple of problems with this. Little media history lesson for you. Just a couple of problems with creating a British Fox News. The first one is that in America, the reason that America has such a batshit, volatile, burst volcano of nonsense like Fox News and Breitbart and Newsmax is because they have that First Amendment stuff going on. They have freedom of speech times a million. Conversely, over here, we don't have the First Amendment. We do have freedom of expression. You know, we've got similar protections and all that stuff, at least for the time being, until they sack off the ECHR and whatever. But we also have very active defamation courts, libel, slander. That's why we've become the sort of international capital of defamation suits. It's why people like Johnny Depp and his ex-wife thrash out their dirty laundry in courts over here, as well as in the States. Now, what happens when you have a broadcasting jurisdiction that doesn't have the First Amendment, so all those protections to the same extent that the US does, where they can say whatever they like all the time, whatever, with the exception of swearing, which is always really weird to me. Like, even on their late night shows, their talk shows, way past what would be the watershed over here, they'll still say stuff like, oh, heck. Really weird. Weird, gaudy, gunny country is the US. Anyway, what happens in the UK when you don't have the First Amendment, you do have defamation, libel and slander, and probably because of the absence of the First Amendment, you have semi-decent regulators. You know, I mean, I know they catch a lot of flack for their complete absence with GB News, but the UK regulator are at least there. They do, in theory, regulate the space. So what happens then? Well, you have a quote-unquote British Fox News released, launched too much fanfare, but who constantly get in trouble with, you know, Ofcom investigations. And I know that they haven't really reprimanded GB News an awful lot, but they have gotten in trouble for the wrong reasons successive times. Now, that's just GB News struggling to operate in the UK space where there is a regulator and there is not the First Amendment. Talk TV is Rupert Murdoch's one, right? They're not quite so crazy. They don't push the boundaries quite so much as GB News. You know, they're not into vaccine skepticism. They're not into any other myriad conspiracy theories. They haven't had, you know, a collection of their hosts kicked off air for saying misogynistic, weird stuff. So they're a little bit calmer. Rupert Murdoch is more of a seasoned professional. He knows what he can and can't get away with in the UK regulatory space. But the second thing, right? So the first thing is like the First Amendment, the regulator. The second thing is this mistaken belief that there is this huge audience out there who are willing to just plant their eyeballs on what could be described as a British Fox News. Huge mistake. I don't know who does their like market research before or why they thought there was this gigantic audience that would be fine to feed a GB News and a Talk TV. But it just, like, despite what everyone says about silent majorities, it just doesn't exist. There's not enough people out there who are buying what these clowns are selling. And so where do we get to if you're a GB News or you're Talk TV? Right, so with GB News, you have Paul Marshall, who was their main investor. He's walked away. For one reason or another, we don't know the exact reasons why yet, but he's put, you know, tens of millions of pounds into that company, and now they're suffering from an advertiser boycott. They are drenched in regulatory investigations. They're loss-making. You know, and maybe he's just had enough. Maybe he's like, right, I got to cut the cord. This has gone on long enough. So there's troubles over that way. With Talk TV, they're finding similar challenges. They're like, not enough people are watching this. You know, for all the talk of go woke, go broke, you know, if you go leftward, if you go progressive, if you are a chili sauce manufacturer and then you put a little rainbow on your pots around the time of Pride Month, oh, go woke, go broke, nobody's going to buy that. That's just, that's for a niche market there. For all of that nonsense, which is precisely the sort of stuff that you would hear on GB News or Talk TV, by the way, it is these exact broadcasters or outlets that are struggling to find an audience large enough that the advertising revenue would sustain them. And so with Talk TV, what you can see here with a tweet from my my friend Sean Adams, who runs Drowned in Sound. He also manages Charlotte Church, if anyone's interested. He's saying, still hardly anyone watching Talk TV since it left terrestrial TV and went YouTube only. And I think this is a really interesting thing to highlight. He says 88 million invested and lost by Murdoch so far. I think it's interesting to call it out because, honestly, I think this, like Talk as you know it as a brand, I think it's going to wind up pretty soon. And I'll tell you why. Like, a lot of people will be like, oh, no, he's making a good decision because he's moving them onto YouTube because that's where the growth markets are and then it's a bit cheaper or they don't have to be regulated in that space. But honestly, I think probably what's going to happen now and the figures that Sean is calling out there, he's saying like, you know, 165 people are watching Kevin O'Sullivan, right? 165. To put that into context, right? Who the fuck am I, right? And my Friday night live streams are watched by 200 people, 250 people every week now. So they are competing with people like me. And yet, to run that show with those studios, with those producers, researchers, the marketing, what are the overheads like? What sort of money is going into this to sustain it? To only bring in 165 viewers for Kevin O'Sullivan. And I thought I'd talk for a minute about what I personally think is interesting about this. You know, because I like to take the piss. You know, sometimes on these shows I do, you know, silly characters and silly voices and stuff. But there's a brain behind it all. And sometimes I have thoughts and legitimate analysis about these things. But listen, as a content creator, as somebody who spends a bit of time on YouTube, I think what's really interesting about this is like mainstream or legacy media conglomerates moving into YouTube from where before they were gatekeepers. So your Rupert Murdochs, your Richard Desmonds, your Barclay brothers, all of these guys were gatekeepers, right? They owned the newspapers, they owned the TV stations, they got to decide who was presenting, what the TV show, like they would hire in producers who would produce content, TV shows, pay-per-views that they thought was interesting, but it's aligned or honed and crafted to their own desire, to their own tastes, right? Gatekeepers. And for a long time, we've been led to believe that the people then that we see on Sky or LBC or, you know, whatever, the reason that they are where they are is because they are good and that's what people like and they are the talented ones. But actually, I think what you're going to see, what we sort of are seeing already, is that when the gatekeeper stuff is removed, when these people are forced to compete with other people, then actually their, what's the word? Their superiority or their ability to capture eyeballs, it kind of falls away. Like 165 people watching a Rupert Murdoch Talk TV Kevin O'Sullivan show. And I know some of you will probably be listening to this or, you know, watching it later on going like, yeah, well, you know, who's heard of Kevin O'Sullivan? You know, he's hardly like their biggest name, is he? But look, here we go. Julia Hartley Brewer, 29th of April, 305 people watch. Like, nobody's watching this show. This TV station, if you can call that that anymore. And it's the same with, the Harry Cole, like, the Sun stuff. Like, they're all moving into YouTube for the regulatory sort of uptick. Like, they don't have to... They're no longer in Ofcom's reach. But I don't know who thinks they're going to be making money at this, or who's actually going to follow them over there, because my sense is, and, I'm happy to be corrected on this, I'm happy to be educated, but my gut feel is that the people who listened to talk radio probably did so in their cars, or maybe like an old boy with the radio on in the kitchen, gets riled up, picks up the phone. Yeah, I agree with everything that you said about the immigrants. Oh, I can't stand refugees. His wife is in the background like, I told you to turn that thing off. You'll only get yourself wound up again, darling. But I get the sense that it's legacy media consumers, the car radio or the radio, the wireless in the kitchen. I don't get the feeling that there's that market is going to join them and move over to YouTube. I just don't. And maybe that's a good thing. If it's your granddad or your great uncle or someone, and day in, day out, he's had the wireless on, and day in, day out, it's like radicalized him. It's slowly made him angrier and angrier, and his wife has had to stand back in the doorway watching him get angrier and anger week by week, month by month, until finally he snaps. Like, maybe it's a good thing that they've moved over to YouTube and he can't follow them over there. Maybe it's a good thing that he won't ever reach that point where he snaps, so his wife and the rest of your family can just get a good night's sleep, not having to worry that he's going to poison the wedding party or in order a sort. Guys, that's it. I got to go. If you're enjoying the podcast, do check out the Friday night live streams, 7:30 every Friday night. If you're not on the Patreon or the YouTube community yet, there's links to both in the description below. If you'd like a Tories Fuck Livestock t-shirt, go on to funk27.co.uk/merch. I think there's a link for that as well. Until next time, keep it booge, keep it binfluencer. I'm out this motherfucker.